Up next, kids with weight problems, depression, anxiety, ADHD may have one thing in common, and it's turning out that might be a history of sleep problems. Several studies in the current issue of the journal Archives of Pediatrics and Adolescent Medicine looked at sleep disorders in very young children, everything from not getting enough sleep to problems like sleep apnea or parenting behaviors that influence their children's sleep, and how these sleep disorders are connected to health problems later on in life. Here to help us sort out these studies, figure out what they mean and what signs parents should be looking for if they suspect that their child has a sleep disorder, is the author of an editorial in the same journal. Michelle Kawa is a fellow in adult and pediatric sleep medicine at Stanford University in Stanford, California. She joins us today from the campus there. Welcome to the program, Dr. Kawa.
Thank you.
Did I get your last name right?
Yes.
I mix up so many names. Thank you for being kind about that. Well, I think that people probably never suspected that sleep disorders could cause so many of these things in their children.
It definitely is a new thought process or thinking process in the, you know, probably in the last 5 to 10 years or so.
Mm-hmm. And how much sleep should our kids get?
So, you know, it all depends, but on average, we look at, we break down the age differences. So for kids that are 5 years old or less, we expect that they should be sleeping at least 11 hours or greater. And kids between 5 and 10 mm-hmm. years old should be sleeping around at least 10 hours or more. And kids that are 10 years or older should be sleeping around 9 hours or more. So that's the general scale that we look at. But obviously, every kid is different.
Mm-hmm. The articles, the studies in this journal show that sleep problems very early in life can lead to a variety of health problems. Let's go through some of what those health problems might be. Give us a rundown, please.
So we want to focus on child sleep disorders. And when we talk about disorders, we think about not just the physiologic disorders, such as the common sleep apnea, as well as restless leg syndrome that we see in children, but also behavioral disturbances during sleep that can lead to further disorders or problems later on in life. So we want to, so the disorders that we are looking at are, you know, sleep apnea later on mm-hmm. in life, restless leg syndrome that continues on in life, mm-hmm. as well as emotional disturbances, including difficulty in school, difficulty with homework, difficulty with interactions with other kids, as well as siblings and the whole family situation. Also, there's a correlation with sleep problems and development of ADHD, or the attention deficit hyperactivity disorder syndrome, as well as other metabolic syndromes such as obesity and cardiovascular consequences later on in life.
Do we know why, if you don't sleep enough, you get obesity? Do we know any of these physiological connections?
Well, several studies that have been done in the past have found a definite correlation between sleep disruption or sleep disorders in the pediatric population and later on obesity in the early adult life, and as well as, you know, the adult life. But we are not sure exactly what is that correlation. There's several studies that were done on several hormones that we have found. One of them is called leptin. Mm-hmm. The other one, it's, you know, growth hormone. Some of these hormones are diurnal, which means that they're secreted in episodic, you know, twice during the 24-hour cycle. And they are important for, you know, growth and maturation. The leptin hormone specifically is an appetite stimulant. And some studies have shown that there is an increase in the leptin hormone secretion with sleep deprivation. So in essence, if more leptin hormone is secreted, it could stimulate the appetite, and therefore it can lead to obesity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There was also some association between kids who got less sleep and spent more hours watching TV, right? Having a higher risk of being overweight.
Exactly. One of the studies that was done in this particular issue of the Archives Journal looked specifically at that. And that study found that kids who sleep less than 12 hours, and this is particularly kids that are around 3 years old who sleep less than 12 hours a day and also watch TV more than 2 hours a day have a higher correlation, what we call a higher odds ratio of, or mm-hmm. chance of developing obesity, five times more than the average kid mm-hmm. who doesn't have that, who sleeps more than 12 hours a day or who watches TV less than 2 hours a day. And we don't know why that is the case for sure, but it may be that, you know, if kids who watch more TV obviously are less functional, they have, you know, they spend less time engaging in activities, and that in itself can mm-hmm. predispose to obesity.
Mm-hmm. What signs should we parents be looking for if we think our kids might have a sleep disorder?
Sure. So as a parent, I would encourage that the parents pay attention to daytime behavior as well as nighttime behavior. In the daytime, you want to watch for signs of irritability. The child could be very irritable during school, in the daycare center, or at home. The child can be very hyperactive, more so than other kids. The child can also be very sleepy or tired or just fatigued throughout the day. Or even aggressive behavior, aggression towards other kids or, you know, other siblings at home. Difficulty with homework, difficulty concentration. Those are signs in the daytime that I would look for. Mm-hmm. Now, it is also very important to look for nighttime symptoms during sleep. So, for instance, if the child is having restless sleep, you know, the child is all over the bed. If the child wakes up throughout the night, if the child has a hard time falling asleep, other physical signs such as snoring, gasping or choking for air, intermittently stop breathing throughout the night, bedwetting beyond the expected age. If the child, you know, has night terrors, you know, wake up screaming, confused, and cannot go back to sleep. Mm-hmm. If the child sweats a lot during the night, if the child coughs a lot. These are all signs that the mm-hmm. parents should watch for during sleep at night.
Hmm. Talking about sleep disorders this hour and Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News with Dr. Michelle Gao, who is a fellow in adult and pediatric sleep medicine at Stanford. When you say get enough sleep, let's say we're talking about 10 hours. Is that a straight 10 hours or is that 8 hours and then a two-hour nap in the afternoon or an hour nap here? Can you make up for that sleep that way? Or do we need to have that straight section of sleep?
No. I mean, we think to, you know, we think in terms of, you know, most kids spend at least, you know, two-thirds of their time sleeping. And so these hours can be broken up in naps as well as, mm-hmm. you know, the actual nighttime hours. So it doesn't have to be straight sleep. However, the naps and the duration of naps and when the child naps will influence the nighttime sleep.
1-800-989-8255. Let's see if we can get a quick call in here from Carl in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hi.
Yeah, hi there. I just wanted to ask the doctor what she thought of the connection between ADHD and the lack of sleep. I know that the class of medications, you know, are to treat ADHD are generally stimulant-type medications. If there's a lack of rest to the brain that would trigger such a condition, is the treating it with a stimulant medication indicative that it's a sleep problem?
Good question.
Hi, Carl. So, sleep apnea or sleep disruption in a child, the symptoms are very closely similar to symptoms of ADHD or ADD in a child. For instance, a child who doesn't sleep well or has sleep problems, whether it's physiologic or, you know, just has disrupted sleep, will a lot of times in the daytime, instead of feeling sleepy or fatigued, will actually overcompensate and become very hyperactive and have difficulty concentrating, difficulty doing homework, interacting with other children. So those symptoms are very similar to ADHD. So what we found is that if a child exhibits those symptoms before we can diagnose the child with ADHD or ADD, we need to make sure that there is no sleep-related disorder that has been undiagnosed in a child first, because the medications for ADHD or ADD obviously are stimulants, and they are not what we call benign medications without side effects. So my recommendation is that if a child has been diagnosed with ADD or ADHD, please make sure that the child does not have an underlying undiagnosed sleep disorder.
Mm-hmm. So make sure, you paid a close enough attention, I guess, by paying attention to those symptoms that you were saying at home.
Exactly, because to treat the underlying sleep disorder is much better off for the child than putting he or she on a stimulant that does mm-hmm. have a lot of side effects.
Do you think that kids have been misdiagnosed this way because the physicians maybe not have been savvy enough to know this?
Well, I definitely think so, and I'm not sure that it's the physician's fault, but mm-hmm. these are findings that we found in the last 5 to 10 years or so that this is all new findings, and I believe that a lot of children who are now young adults or adults that have always had this diagnosis of ADHD and ADD actually have had sleep apnea or sleep-related disorders, all along have been misdiagnosed.
That could be a lot of kids.
Yes, definitely.
So they they're getting all this unnecessary medication then.
Exactly.
Is it ever too late to go back and re-diagnose somebody that way?
Definitely not. I mean, we have a lot of young adults or adults who come in with also, and now the sleep disruption or sleep disorders have now become more apparent because they get sleep disorders only get worse as you get older, and so they come in for actual sleep issues now, and so we found that we've diagnosed a lot of sleep problems, and it does take away their does help or resolve their ADD or ADHD diagnosis.
Well, that's the great takeaway from today, if nothing else from our segment today. I want to thank you very much for taking time to be with us.
Sure.
Dr. Michelle Cao is a fellow in adult and pediatric sleep medicine at Stanford University in Stanford, California. Greg Smith composed our theme music. We had help today from NPR librarian Kim Molesky and engineer Dawn Davis in Stanford. If you have comments or questions and you'd like to write it the classic mail way, right? You can send your letters with the stamp on it to Science Friday, 4 West 43rd Street, room 306, New York, New York, 10036. Surf over to our website, The New Way. Leave us some email at sciencefriday.com. We're also podcasting and blogging, and there's some videos up there of past guests of Science Friday and videos that you've been sending to us. Keep those videos coming. We're putting them up there. Also, there are back editions, and you can sign up for our new podcast if you're not already a member. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.